Yo, what's up, you guys? So two things. Number one, this is a sick conversation with the founder of Zeros, David. He's building quantum satellites to replace GPS satellites. And basically the main problem with GPS satellites is the timing of like time synchronization. And so quantum satellites can do this at a 10 to 100x times more accuracy. Now, I know like quantum sounds like a lot of hype a lot of the time, but this was really interesting and I thought it was very novel and I hadn't heard of this. And so I thought it was awesome. Now, disclaimer, Zeros is raising a crowdfunding round right now. I personally did not invest. This is not financial advice. I thought this company was really cool though. And this gets into the second part of this intro is that I've had most of my stuff in crypto lately, the magic beans, instead of like investing in startups. And, you know, I'm going to make a whole video on this. It was like a faster path to monetization, but essentially, the second part of this is that look around me, like I'm at my childhood home. I'm visiting my parents. We've moved around a bunch, but you know, back here for a bit, and it's not a podcast studio. And so now that crypto is kind of, you know, playing out, my plans for the next week or maybe a few weeks, maybe a month, I hope it doesn't take too long. But what I really need to do is I've canceled my lease in my old place, which is why it's a new background. And I'm traveling around, I'm checking out new cities. I went to Austin, I went to the Cyber Rodeo last weekend, which was super sick. That was so much fun. Hung out with the Hyperchain squad. I met Elon for like a brief second. And then I'm gonna go to like Miami, maybe New York, maybe LA, but I'm thinking Austin. Anyways, the point is that crypto's playing out, and it's time to like do the podcast properly. And so what I need to do is I need to get a studio and I need to hire an editor. So first off, like if you're an editor, and I have big goals for this podcast, I really do think it can be something incredible, especially for like the Twitter community and like just promoting hard tech and everything like that. Like I have really big ideas for this. So if you're an editor, you want to work on the podcast, like hit me up. Or if you know somebody, I was thinking about doing like some like 5K hiring bonus or something. So hit me up with the right people. And the other thing is that, yeah, so I'm hiring an editor, I'm getting a place. And yeah, so like podcast is kind of going to be on pause because I want to do it right. It has to be right. And so anyways, that's a little long intro. But oh, and one last thing is that, see, this is why I need an editor, you guys, is that I was using Zoom and I know there's better applications out there. I need to like figure it out. It didn't record my video. It only recorded David's. So if you're watching this on YouTube, I don't know, maybe just go check out the Spotify links or other audio links in the description. Or if you're using YouTube Premium, like power to you, then you can watch it. I also like one last thing is that YouTube is going to be releasing a podcast app soon, which is dope. So anyways, that's the last. So yeah, sorry about the video. Kind of, I'm like figuring out some life stuff. And lastly, like this is just a dope company that I wanted to share with you guys before kind of like taking a little break. I'll make a full longer video about all of this because I guess I've talked about this for 4 minutes. So I definitely have a lot more to say about it. So I'll make a longer video. But anyways, without further ado, let's get into it.
Now is the time to take risk.
This is really exciting.
Wow, Jack. Well, thank you very much. My pleasure to be here and talk to you and talk to your audience.
So look, let's lay the ground level. What is the problem with GPS? And like I was saying, as we were talking before, GPS is not actually about navigation. It's more about timing. So what's the problem with this?
No, you hit the nail on the head. When people think of GPS, you think of your location app. You think of driving directions on your phone or on your car. But in reality, the majority of the benefit, the economic benefit provided by GPS since its inception has been a clock for the world. So all networks, all communications, all financial transactions rely on a common timestamp. Without that, networks would get gummed up, just data wouldn't move. It's analogous to, having synchronized traffic lights. If you get green all the way, or making sure you have good timing if you're taking a train station across town. And all these networks rely on that time signal from GPS. So without that, if for whatever terrible reason GPS went down, we would lose financial transactions first. Credit cards and ATM would go offline. Within 12, 24 hours, you'd lose your cell phone would degrade and go down. Your internet would go down. And within a few days, even your power would go out. The power grids also rely on that timing from GPS. So it's a single point of failure for our modern world.
Yeah. And so in 2016, this is like a often talked about event when GPS failed, when I think it was the Army was like trying to recalibrate their satellites and they uploaded the wrong timestamp. What exactly happened there?
Yeah. So in the early morning of January 26, 2016, networks around the world started inexplicably degrading and failing. The first to go offline was emergency and fire rescue radios in the US and Canada. They went offline first. BBC digital radio went down. But there was a global panic among network engineers as they saw their networks degrade. And by the time they figured out what happened, it was, like you said, it was a 13 microsecond error in the timing on one of the GPS satellites. And it was a satellite operator error. You know, the operators, you know, released a statement about it a couple of days later. Sorry, you know, one of those kind of things. But it's one of those events that illustrates just how close we are to, you know, kind of a modern day communication apocalypse if GPS ever went down.
And just to put that in perspective, because we're going to be talking about microseconds, nanoseconds, and picoseconds. Microseconds is actually pretty massive compared to the nanoseconds that the current GPS satellites currently operate on.
Yeah. And so just to give you a perspective, you know, people think of the timing and the importance of having an accurate clock on your phone. For you and I in our modern world, if our clocks are accurate to within a minute or so, we're good. You know, you'll be late for meetings or this or that. And then there are applications. Okay. You need to get down to, you know, 1/100th, 1/1000th of a second, which is a millisecond, microseconds, another layer below that, then nanoseconds, then picoseconds. But 1 microsecond is actually the time it takes for a hummingbird to flap its wing once. It's a very, very short amount of time. And that error in one GPS satellite damn near derailed all communications. So it just shows the fragility of like how tightly wound these networks are and require, you know, movement of data.
And then just to expand on that, when you were saying that emergency services were the first to fail, what exactly happens in that situation?
Well, it essentially failed because just in general, the way these communication networks work. So in the olden days, if you're old enough, you probably remember nobody needed to synchronize anything. You had a clock, you know, you had a wall in the clock, and every once in a blue moon, you would maybe call a phone number or check, and you would set it manually, kind of like we did over the weekend with daylight savings time. And everything was analog and everything was broadcast. So you'd have a broad beacon up on the hill, and it would send its signal to your TV. And whenever it arrived, you'd watch your episode of Magnum PI, and you know, everything's fine. About the mid 90s, things went digital. And you know, that means we moved things from waves into zeros and ones. Mm-hmm. And then cell networks started to be developed. These communication networks started to be developed. And they started to get smarter and smarter about packing in more data within the available spectrum. And the way they did that is they would slice things into packets, time division multiplex, and now time division duplex, and move the data back and forth very rapidly, but on kind of very discrete patterns. And as you kind of got more advanced with that, there was a time reference that you needed, because now you had all these cell towers and users and elements moving data around. And if they had different clocks on them, they would get jammed up. Data would go from you, the cell phone user, to the tower, and the tower would relay it to another network, and everything's getting around these things. And if the clocks were off, you know, you had to create a bit of a buffer before you can move the data onto the next item. And it just turns out those emergency and, you know, fire rescue radios, just happen to be the most susceptible to, you know, being gummed up when the data, when the time synchronization started going offline. Now, as the networks have evolved, they started using GPS because the time was available. That was it. That's the only reference out there to provide that time reference. Everybody started using it and kind of buffering it or backstopping it with other more exotic methods. So there's a little bit of stability and resilience in the network, but it just so happened those emergency and fire rescue radio networks didn't have that level of backstop on it. So it collapsed pretty quickly.
Okay. And then, you know, I want to talk about how you're solving this, but before this, GPS, it's awesome. It's easily spoofable now and jammable. So it's just really expensive to do this, right?
Yeah. Jamming is trivially easy. So jamming is essentially using an RF signal and overpowering the signal you're jamming. And GPS are on satellites. They're about 10,000 kilometers away. And the signals are pretty weak by the time they get to your cell phone. So it's fairly easy to buy a jammer. You can buy it for $20 off eBay that will overpower that signal. But you would know that, right? Because your GPS is offline. You know, it would create problems for you. But what you're seeing with more sophisticated actors like Russia, like China, is they have the capability to spoof. And spoofing means you create a fake GPS signal and make the receiver think it's in a different time or location than it actually is. And this is in the news quite a bit lately because of, you know, the Ukraine conflict. Russia has had a long history of making ships and planes think they're in different locations than they actually are. This is fairly well documented. There are reports that talk about this. There is some reports, unconfirmed, that when there was a drone that crashed in Iran a decade or so ago, the Iranians used GPS spoofing, Chinese spoofing equipment to make the drone think it was actually in on the other side of the border. And then, of course, it didn't know exactly where it was and then went over the border and got shot down. So you're absolutely correct. This is part of the problem with GPS is just it's very susceptible to, you know, outside influences like that.
And when it's spoofing, is it returning a signal to the GPS satellites with different locations than it actually is? Because the location is kind of on the time that it takes the signal to reach the location. And so what they're doing is they're kind of like waiting to send it back, or how does spoofing work kind of technically?
No, you're absolutely right. So the way GPS works fundamentally is each satellite in the GPS constellation knows its own position in time. Mm. And it transmits that signal to you, the receiver on the ground. Now you don't know your position or time, but you know the satellite's location and time, and it has a way to calculate the distance of the satellite. Now, if you know that position and you know the distance to it, can't triangulate your location. That's why you need about a half dozen GPS satellites in view at any given time to accurately triangulate your position and time. So what the GPS spoofers do is, you know, again, they overpower the GPS signal. And they put in kind of a false position or time on their transmitter so that your receiver thinks, oh, that's a GPS satellite. I will triangulate my location to that. And, you know, you can wreak a lot of havoc that way. You know, you don't have to come up with too many sci-fi scenarios where you can imagine, you know, potentially hijacking a plane or a self-driving vehicle by making it think it's in a different location than it actually is.
Okay, so this is the problem, is that GPS is a legacy kind of network and we haven't upgraded it. So how are you solving this? What is it in your email? It said Zyros. I've been calling it Zeros, but it's Zyros.
Zeros is, yeah, that's how we pronounce it.
Awesome. Okay. So how are you solving this using quantum clock synchronization? How is this the solution?
Yeah, so this is a fairly well-known problem. My co-founder, who came out of the Office of Naval Research, knew that this was a problem. He was a quantum scientist And in 2018, he invented quantum clock synchronization using relatively standard quantum optical hardware. And it started, you know, like every great breakthrough technology as an idea. He wrote a paper. There was some hardware in the lab, so we decided to demonstrate it, test it out in a lab environment. Lo and behold, it had a level of accuracy that was very impressive, down to picoseconds. Mm-hmm. And again, picosecond, one picosecond is 1/1000th of a nanosecond. GPS is accurate to roughly, with very good equipment, 40 nanoseconds. So getting down to picoseconds, that's three orders of magnitude better, more accurate. And so he patented it. We formed the company around this in 2019. And since we've been, we've gotten some US government contracts and are now architecting that system to replace GPS with a focus on the timing at first. Timing is the easiest market to address and the simplest to develop. So we're going to start off with providing that enterprise timing system for networks and telecommunications.
Okay. So I kind of jumped the gun. I want to talk about what I was reading about other replacement systems. There was eLORAN. Can you kind of explain what the other options have been and why these haven't been implemented?
Yeah. So eLORAN is an enhanced LORAN system. LORAN goes back to World War II. So this is.
And what does LORAN stand for?
Oh, yeah.
If you know, I can also Google it.
Yeah. I think I know, but let's look it up real quick. Because it's location. Yeah. It's long range navigation.
Okay.
It was invented during World War II, came out of the United States in World War II. So prior to World War II, how do you navigate? How would you know where your ship is on the seas? How would you know where, you know, planes are flying or troops are at? And, you know, it was celestial navigation using landmarks, things like that. LORAN came along and essentially just used long-range RF radio waves to triangulate your position. So, you know, you have a AM station, you know, over here, an AM station, you know, and you could kind of triangulate your position based off of the signal, kind of knowing the rough direction to each of those signals. You can roughly triangulate your position. And GPS essentially is a similar system. You just move it into space. So it kind of helps for ships that are out in the water or your real remote areas or ships flying globally. Our planes flying globally. And eLORAN, what's old is new. eLORAN has kind of come back in vogue because GPS got adopted by everybody because it worked so well. And now people are recognizing, holy cow, it's a single point of failure. If GPS satellites went down for whatever reason, it would be bad. Mm-hmm. And the military and the government's embraced an eLORAN system primarily as a backup to GPS, because at the very least, you know, it's easier to defend, you know, a number of fixed sites on the earth rather than, you know, satellites, which are kind of sitting ducks.
Okay. So eLORAN is more terrestrial. It's not actually satellites, and then GPS satellites. So eLORAN is a backup system. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, jumping back into the kind of the quantum clock synchronization, how does that work? How does quantum clock synchronization work?
Yeah. So, you know, when I mentioned GPS, it has what they call a one-way time transfer system over RF. So our system is using that optical quantum link for very accurate two-way time transfer. And the way it works is it's quantum, so it sounds very exotic.
Yeah, it's quantum's like a bad marketing term at this point. Yeah. I'm mentally skeptical of anything.
Yeah. Agreed. So we gotta kind of peel back the hype from the reality.
Mm-hmm.
So our system is essentially a laser. Most laser communications, optical communication systems work by taking a laser, pulsing it on and off very rapidly. And that's how you move zeros and ones at a very, very high data rate. And that's been around forever. Quantum communications also uses a laser, but you're turning down the power on the laser so that you get a stream of particles of light called photons. And there's been methods out there for a few decades on converting those photons into pairs of photons that are entangled. So you get a blue laser going in and you get a pair of entangled red photons coming out.
At the receiver.
Just coming out of your box, out of your transmitter.
Okay. So out of the satellite.
Out of the
satellite, you have a blue light and then it turns into two red.
Yeah. So it's, and then so for all intents and purposes, you got a stream of, you know, two red lasers, but the photons, the important part is they're quantumly entangled.
Okay.
And they share the same information because of the magic of entanglement. And I can send you one of the photons. I can receive one of the photons. Normally, this has been used for, you know, we can both measure our photons because they share information. We could create a string of random bits that we use for encryption keys. This is what is known as quantum key distribution. And QKD was invented 30 years ago, so that's kind of old hat. What my co-founder recognized too was that, well, those photons, you can measure it with your clock. I can measure my photon with my clock. Our clocks are offset. We don't know how much, but we know they're not aligned. And we can use that to figure out that offset between our clocks to a very, very high level of accuracy. Mm-hmm. And that's at a high level how it works. And like I said, it's orders of magnitude more accurate than what you can get with them. And definitely a lot more secure because you are dealing with entangled photons, it can't be jammed or spoofed the way RF can.
Because if one of them's different, you'll notice something is different. So they have to spoof both of them. When you shoot the photons from the satellite, do you know which receivers they're going to? Like, you can kind of target them to different receivers?
Yeah. The technology out there, that's fairly straightforward to do. Yeah.
Okay. So you target them to specific receivers and then you can tell the difference. So then you can't actually spoof. Can you spoof both of them or?
No, not, you know, there's still work we got to do on the security proof, but fundamentally, no.
Okay.
You think of RF, you know, RF is a, you know, just a broad, you know, electromagnetic, you know, spectrum that goes out. So that's why it makes really RF receivers are fairly omnidirectional and can be overpowered fairly easily. Just in general, an optical link is point to point, and which right there makes it hard for somebody to insert themselves in the middle and, you know, confuse you. But then you have the entanglement piece on top of that, and we can put some protocols in place to say, you know, you're getting the link from me and me only. There's no fake man in the middle that can make you think you're getting a signal from anybody other than me.
Okay. And then why is it faster if both of them are using lasers?
Well, just fundamentally, you're saying why is it more accurate?
Yeah, you were saying it was to the nanoseconds or to the picoseconds instead of nanoseconds.
Yeah, so there are a number of reasons why you got a limitation on the accuracy you get from RF. You know, there's a kind of a stack of reasons, but part of it is just losses associated with RF signal. You get some multipath, you get some kind of effects like that. And also just the accuracy of, you know, how you get the signal itself from the satellite or the source. It kind of gets a bit into the weeds, but
I'm totally fine.
The magic things about is those two photons are created they're created at the same time, right? They have the same time reference at the time of creation. So, you know, I can send one to me and I send one to you. We know that every photon is kind of starting with that very exact same time reference, which is part of the reason that in theory, you can really get very high levels of accuracy synchronizing our clocks, which are off from each other.
Okay. So you have them starting at the same time. And then once they're received, then they check that time and then you can check it to a higher order of accuracy, magnitude of accuracy. Okay. So it's like kind of done on the back end afterwards.
Yep.
So it's not like real time. Okay. Cool.
And we're working on the system, so it will be real time. I send you the photons and it's near real time that, you know, hey, with it, you know, our goal here is that we get that we establish the link between the two of us. And within a few seconds, tens of seconds, you know, we got our clocks, you know, synced up immediately. So it's just a quick, I zap you and the synchronization happens very accurately and very rapidly.
Okay.
So, yeah.
How do atomic clocks fit into this?
So atomic clocks, we aren't building the clocks, we're synchronizing the clocks. So remember the original story we talked about, the January 26th story. The networks that were able to stay stable had atomic clocks within the network as kind of a backup. So essentially, imagine a very simple network. You know, you have clocks, they're super cheap, like the clock you have in your laptop, but the clock you have in your cell phone is a very cheap crystal oscillator. And it drips over time. It's not very accurate. There are now more precise clocks, what they call chip scale atomic clocks, but they're expensive. They're like a couple grand. And then you have very exquisite high-end atomic clocks that are tens of thousands of dollars, but they don't drip. They're very stable over time. And then you can get up to, I think the most accurate clock in the world is one just down the road in Boulder, Colorado. It's owned by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, the clock reference. It's called NISTEP 2. I don't even want to know how expensive that is. Probably millions, if not billions of dollars. It's very, very stable. Mm-hmm. That's all it is if you want to pay a lot of money for a very stable atomic, you can. It's not useful for consumer devices or, you know, in the thousands, if not millions of nodes within a large network. But networks will have a few of them strategically placed in there to maintain a stability backup in case of an outage, a GPS outage, a phenomenon that's called holdover. So if you're designing your network to have 24-hour holdover, that means you got to put more of these very stable atomic clocks within your network so you can stay, you know, things running over 24 hours, maybe at hour 25, though, everything just collapses. Value of having these very valuable atomic clocks in the middle of your network.
So you'll still have some of these within the network.
The nice thing about our system is we can synchronize via satellite over a very large area. We'll get us to synchronize across fiber. It's an optical system after all. So that's part of the value add we have, is that the overall system will be cheaper because you don't need these as many of these very expensive, exquisite atomic clocks.
So you can integrate with the current system. That's one of the most important.
Yeah, no, that is our plan, is to develop a system that is, you know, I don't want to use the word plug and play, but that at the very least, it starts off as an augmentation to existing timing from GPS. And then over time, networks will rely 100% on our system. You know, once we have enough satellites on orbit, everything's well maintained and, you know, on orbit backup. So you don't have a single point of failure. But that is the plan.
And so that was one of the interesting things when I was reading on the Space Ventures, was that you were starting with a terrestrial system.
Yeah. So terrestrial, it's a nice way to start because it works over, you know, our system works over fiber. It works over free space. So, you know, I can link, you know, between the tops of buildings and things like that with, you know, traditional laser. And it works from satellite and satellite, between satellites, inter-satellite, satellite to ground. It's an optical system. Mm-hmm. And just the way we're going to roll out, just naturally, we're going to start with providing time distribution over local fiber networks, because that's the easiest get while we build our first satellite. You know, satellites will take a little while to get on orbit. So it's a good way to get a little bit of commercial revenue, you know, demonstrate the value of our technology and system while we're building out our satellite constellation.
So more specifically, like, who will your customers be at that time?
Yeah. So like I said, all networks need timing from GPS, or just need timing full stop. The biggest consumer of these devices right now are telecommunication networks, you know, the AT&Ts and Verizons and BTs and Telefonicas and Telenors of the world. But it's also necessary for data centers. There's actually a lot of talk about how this is useful for distributed databases and edge compute. Better timing synchronization allows distributed databases to work more efficiently, which reduces power consumption and cooling costs. So you got data centers, you also got financial networks. Again, better timing reduces latency across networks, which is valuable for high frequency trading. Power grids. Power grids don't really need very accurate timing, but again, there's a concern about the jamming of it. You know, last thing you want to do is bring down a major power grid on the Eastern Seaboard because somebody has a $20 jammer strategically located. So, you know, those are the networks that use timing and synchronization today. For us, we would start off with a couple of initial fiber related networks, our fiber networks that address some of these systems. And we're working on like a half dozen projects in the near term on, you know, rolling out our system.
And then, so kind of the further out vision is that you get it between like 6 to 12 satellites that are either geostationary or you were saying maybe LEO. And then would that replace GPS completely, or would you still be augmenting GPS? Or yeah, what's the vision?
We want to have a timing service that replaces GPS. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There is a thought that GPS, as we know it today, will one day be gone. It'll be extinct. Mm-hmm. There's already some, what they call some acts that were initiated in 2018 to start the mechanism to replace GPS. You know, these government agencies move very slowly. So they were actually supposed to have initial replacements up by 2020. And of course, it hasn't even started yet. But when that new GPS comes online, I think there are groups that would very much like it to make it military use only. When GPS started off, it was originally developed in the 1970s. It was only meant to be used for the military. It was never, ever meant to be used for civilian use. Mm-hmm. And it took two executive orders, one by Ronald Reagan in the 80s and one by Bill Clinton in the 90s, that made it fully available for commercial civilian use, which is why we're using it as we are today. But I do feel, this is a little bit controversial statement, but I do feel that the replacement for it will be a military use only, and private companies like us will be building and offering your position in timing in the future.
Okay. What's the enhancement to the new GPS system?
Yeah, you know, if you think like the military does, you know, obviously they want to make it more accurate, but definitely the key word with what they're calling an alternative position navigation and timing system, APNT, is that resiliency. Again, it's been well recognized that the GPS satellites are sitting ducks. They can be blown up. They can be blinded. They could be have issues with it. In the run up to the Ukraine conflict, Russia launch an anti-satellite missile in November. And it was big news in the space industry because it created a lot of destructive debris. Yeah. And everybody kind of scratched their head because everybody knew that Russia had that capability. So why were they doing this? Mm-hmm. Well, it became clear about a month later when one of the broadcasters on Russia's state national news TV station explicitly said that if NATO crosses a red line, they will blow up all the GPS satellites. So at the time, again, I don't think it made big news because, you know, we were still in that delusion that there wasn't going to be this invasion. But now, you know, it's starting to raise a bit more understanding that a new network, a new system has to be put in place that can't be knocked out in time of a conflict like that, particularly when you think about how critical it is to our modern everyday lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So that makes sense. So they're trying to be a little bit more private about it, less public.
Yeah. Within certain circles, there's been panic, but there's been kind of panic, a low level of panic for years, decades. There was a report that came out in 2001. Again, got overshadowed by the events of September 11th that talked about the need for something more resilient than GPS. Just anything, anytime you have something that, you know, a single point of failure for our modern worlds, you gotta put in some backup. You gotta put in some protection.
Yeah.
just fundamentally.
Okay. So once you, let's say once you have 6 to 12 satellites up, one thing I think, as far as I understand, is that the capacity of the system will be greater. What kind of happens when the capacity of the system for GPS is increased? Does that question make sense?
You're saying as far as, you know, offering a bit better accuracy or a bit better capability, you're saying?
Can you have more capacity? Does that question even make sense? Or like can you do more GPS or more timing services? What I'm kind of getting at is, you've mentioned maybe 5G or self-driving cars will be enabled. So maybe it's not necessarily a capacity thing, but more of a timing thing.
Yeah. So I think it's, so the point to your question is, once we have our global timing service in place, then we can provide our timing for many millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of, you know, enterprise user. And eventually, once we get a last mile signal out on a terrestrial, then it's, you know, many, many millions of mobile users. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of the reason, one of the things we like about the system we're building. You know, you don't need 300 satellites, 1,000 satellites, 30,000 satellites to do what we need to do. You only need that set number of satellites. And then, you know, you can address millions and millions of users around the world with that fundamental small constellation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to your point, you know, unlike a communication satellite network or some of these things, you know, as you add more users, you got to kind of tack on more satellites, but that's not the case with our system.
Okay. And then let's talk about like what this enables that's not currently enabled. So you were saying like self-driving cars. I think in the interview with Space Ventures, you were like, we definitely want to present this to Tesla at some point, you know, that's a goal. So how does this kind of enable that?
Yeah. So this is a little bit further down the road. So the steps we're going in is, hey, we'll provide a timing distribution across fiber networks near term, then one satellite for North America. And then, like you said, half dozen satellites for global timing distribution, but that's only timing. That's only timing for fixed enterprise sites. The next step beyond that then would be a position signal over 5G, over, you know, normal cell signals. And then we can address timing for mobile users and position for mobile users. When you think about how GPS works, you know, you need about a half dozen satellites in view to kind of triangulate your position. And that works great when you're cruising down the freeway or if you're out in the middle of open road. But if you're in the middle of a major city, downtown Manhattan, downtown San Francisco, you got these skyscrapers, these urban canyons that block the signal and create multipath. And if you want to have a self-driving car that's truly self-driving, that is your biggest challenge, because that's where you need the best location position accuracy with your car, is when you're driving down these crowded streets. Being accurate to a meter isn't going to cut it when you're driving in these things.
Could you just explain a multipath just for people?
So, you know, you're triangulating your position on the satellites, you know, based on the direct view. But if you're in like a middle of a city, that signal is bouncing off things. Mm-hmm. So it kind of adds some length to the distance calculation. It makes you think that the kind of the position, it just messes up the signal a bit, creates some self-interference with the original signal. It's just a fundamental RF problem. You just think about like the radio signals bouncing around when you're in, you know, going drive in the middle of skyscrapers. Mm-hmm. Grades of accuracy. And there's just fundamentally nothing you can do about that.
So our thought is,
I mean, there's papers written about this, so it's not necessarily our initial idea. That one thing you do have when you're driving in a big city is access to a lot of local signals. Yes. There's a ton of cell sites. There's thousands of cell sites in the Bay Area alone. And you can only imagine when you're driving down the road, how many Wi-Fi signals you are connecting, you know, you can see with your laptop or your phone. So any one of those can be a carrier for that position signal, a carrier for a timing signal. So you can use that. Now you're resolving to dozens of fixed sites to really get that position accuracy that you need for a self-driving vehicle in an urban environment.
Mm-hmm. And so how much does this increase the like resolution of the distance of where they are?
You know, back of the envelope calculations tell you it's going to be centimeter sub centimeter. So if you're going, you know, and that's good enough, right? If you're,
what is it right now?
You know, again, if you had open sky, clear view, many, many satellites in view, you know, maybe it's 10, 20 centimeters. But again, in an environment like that, it's probably closer to a meter.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy, right? I mean,
yeah, that's life and death or a pedestrian.
meter, if you're plus or minus a meter, you're hitting a pedestrian on one side or a car on the other side, right? So when I did my presentation, I talked a lot about what the timing accuracy enables. And, you know, that's really a key thing, a theme in what we're doing. You know, GPS is out there. It's available. It's been used for decades, but it's hit its ceiling. And we want to enable some of these applications that we believe will just never see the light of day without something like what we're doing.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I love that. And so one of the benefits of your technology too, is that it's cheaper than current terminals or receivers. Is that correct? So then you can scale. Well, how is it cheap?
Well, at scale, it should be, at least for the piece parts, and primarily because, again, we can eliminate some of these expensive atomic clocks within the network. So, you know, right now, our hardware is still a fairly early stage, so it's a little expensive today. But again, you project out, once you start building these at hundreds, if not thousands of units, it should be a cheaper overall unit or system.
Mm-hmm. So, Okay. So we'll see. Or yeah. What's kind of like your background for how did you get into this?
My background is space. So, over 25 years ago, I started working at major satellite manufacturers, old space companies. So I'm very familiar with what it takes to build a satellite, get it deployed in complex system architectures like that. I'm a system engineer by training. I got my MBA in 2015 and I did what everybody does when they get an MBA, join a startup. So for me, Xeros is my third startup, but the first where I'm a founder. And the other two startups are doing very well. They're on exit trajectories. And they're kind of similar type of things where, you know, commercializing hardware that was kind of at the point, inflection point of coming out R&D and lab environments. So it's, you know, so my co-founder, he's the quantum scientist. He's the brains of the company and the group. I'm just there to, you know, get this built, get this delivered. That's what I like to do. And that's where my background is.
Well, it's pretty cool that your co-founder patented this or accreted the research in 2018. So it's like, this is very new. This is novel. And it's like now it's possible to commercialize it. It's not like it's just been sitting around. So that's pretty interesting. In my opinion, I also had a question. GPS satellites are susceptible to like solar flares. How would your satellites compare to that?
Yeah, we would have to build that in. The only way you can combat the radiation environment, so to say, with solar flares is some radiation hardening of the satellite, which can make it heavier, make it more expensive. We're kind of scheming on what can we do to make our network, our system more resilient. And there's a couple different ways to do that, including design it in so it's, you know, radiation hardened, as well as having on-ground backup. So any satellite gets knocked out, you can launch a replacement real quickly. Having on-orbit spares, you know, there's a number of tricks in the trade you can do, create a level of resiliency in case, you know, some major solar event or, you know, any other kind of contingency where orbital debris or even kind of conflict knocks your satellite out of orbit.
Okay. Yep. That makes sense. And so right now, like where's the technology right now? It's in kind of proof of concept, building out the initial steps. We're kind of ready right now.
Yeah. Like I said, we've demonstrated it in the lab. We're now working on the next gen of that design as we speak, you know, building the next set of the hardware. It's fairly straightforward hardware, quite frankly. We're really spending quite a bit more of our time on the system architecture and the software because the hardware is relatively straightforward, but we are building kind of the next gen of that hardware system. And that's part of the reason we're in a seed fundraise right now is because we want to use that proceeds to create that commercial product, that fiber product.
And just to talk about that fundraise of it, you've raised from traditional investors, but now you're also doing this more crowdfunding kind of thing. Why did you decide to do that?
It's actually, we've had good success with, you know, traditional VCs. We've also gotten some government projects, some government funding. We've also gotten grants, non-dilutive funding. But one of the areas we've done very well, it's kind of inspired us a bit, is, you know, pitching with angels and angel networks. We found that angels have been not necessarily large check sizes, but they brought support and connections and expertise to our team. You look at what we're doing at Zeros, we're a little bit different. We're not another launch vehicle company, another AI company. So we're more we're really looking to get that network effect that comes with reaching out through you and through, you know, kind of these crowdfunding efforts to get our word out there and to get people interested and excited about what we're doing. And then as we go forward, you know, they're making connections for us, helping us out, pointing out, you know, other groups and, you know, companies we should be talking to. It's funny because we're finding applications we didn't even know existed for timing. And so, you know, part of this is, you know, what we need to do, evangelizing the importance of this, because it's not well known among the common public.
Like some of your investors have come up with new use cases. Can you give me an example, Peter?
Well, one of the groups we were talking to, we got connected with a group that pointed out timing for metrology. So there's, you know, kind of papers that says that, you know, you have an RF broadcast from a cell tower or a radio tower. If you know the time between the transmitter and the receiver to very high level accuracy, you can calculate the time of transmission, you know, across that distance. And the more water vapor that's in the air, it kind of impacts that time. So you could actually kind of do a fairly decent measurement of the amount of water vapor in the air in the local areas. Yeah, it's like I said, I never would have thought of that. But of course, you can only unlock that, enable it, if you have good time resolution synchronization between the transmitter and receiver. So, You know, it's a funny world, but yeah, those are the kind of things that we find out about as we go.
No, that's awesome. And then you also have grants from NASA or already working with NASA as well. What kind of your collaboration?
Small Business Innovation Research Grants. Okay. This is an outstanding program that government agencies put in place to, you know, to make it easier for small innovative startups like us to do business with these government agencies. You know, they're always got that reputation of being monolithic and hard, you know, acquisition regulations. So the SBIR program has been a great foot in the door for me and many other startups. And we got a number of what they call phase one SBIR contracts or grants, depending how you look at it. And the way they're structured is, you know, if, hey, it's $150,000 from NASA, you know, you have to submit a proposal. And, you know, usually you have 6 months, 6 to 12 months to deliver something. You know, normally it's a report, sometimes it's hardware, prototype, things like that. So yeah, we've done well with those kind of projects. We're bidding on more. And, you know, it's a good way for us to get our technology in the door with groups that are traditionally kind of hard to break in with.
Yeah, that makes sense. Look, I know we're coming up on our time. Was there anything else that I wanted to talk about? Or
no, I you know, off the top of my head, you asked a lot of great questions. Hopefully this is illuminating for you and your audience, but no, I think we covered all the good.
Yeah, pieces. I mean, I think we covered, you know, the problems with GPS, other systems, and then this system, how it works, what it enables, like self-driving cars, why it's unhackable or unspoofable, and then kind of, you know, the fundraising side of it. So I think that's pretty great. And I really appreciate your time.
Oh, well,
thank you, Jack.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. One last thing is that if people want to learn more, what should they go check out?
Well, we have a lot of resources on our website, zeros.com. So I encourage people to go there. We have some educational resources on our website. There should also be a link on our website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. We try to make a little bit about the company, but more about what's in the news in the world of space, quantum, and timing, as well as kind of highlighting, you know, relevant events of the day. This the last newsletter, we actually talked about how new space is stepping up with the conflict in Ukraine and the value of that to provide communications and surveillance and access outside of the old Cold War parameters. So it should be educational for your readers. And we're constantly publishing, you know, blog posts and educational primers. We have a quantum communications primer that you can download from our website. So what we're doing is complicated. So we're trying to make it easier for anybody, not just the technologists and scientists out there, to understand what we're doing and the value of it.
Yep. That makes sense. Okay, cool. Thank you for your time. Also, go follow me on Twitter, Nezrek__. Okay, bye.
And with that, I guess the small break begins. My search for the editor begins. My search for a new studio begins. And I'm really excited for the future. And I'll make a longer video about all of this, all my thoughts on this, because I do want to share it with you guys. I mean, that's the point. We're on this journey together. So, all right, guys, I'll see you in the next one. Peace.